Okay. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Thursday, March 11th, 2021, Richardson's Bay Regional Agency Board of Directors meeting. I would like to let everybody know that in compliance with local and state shelter-in-place orders, we are doing a Zoom meeting tonight. The way you can participate remotely is that you can raise your hand through the chat function, and we will put you on the list to speak, and the meeting host will let you know when it's your turn. You can also use #9 on your keyboard or your keypad to raise hand. And with that, I would like to hand it over to the Vice Chair Pro Tem, Stephanie Moulton-Peters, to call the meeting to order and report back about what happened in closed session.
Very good. Thank you, Chris. Good evening, everyone. I want to welcome everyone to the Richardson Bay Regional Agency meeting, Board of Directors meeting of Thursday, March 11th, 2021. We did meet in closed session, and direction was given to staff and to council, and there is nothing else to report out. At this point, I would entertain a motion, entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda. The consent agenda is routine items. However, if any member of the board or a member of the public would like to pull an item off consent, now would be the time to do that. Does anyone wish to pull anything from consent? Okay.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Okay. Board Member Fredericks?
Yes. You have to open it to public comment for public members if they want to pull it.
We did. And yes. Nobody asked to have it pulled. So I heard an aye from Board Member Fredericks. Board Member Block?
Aye.
And Board Member Moulton-Peters?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes 3-0.
Thank you. So item number 3 was election of Board of Directors Vice Chair. That was done at the onset of the meeting, so on a pro tem basis, so that we could conduct the closed session. So we'll now move to item number 4. It's an informational item about the purview and work of Richardson Bay Region.
Question?
Yes.
Does that mean did you take a 4/5 vote take that in closed session rather than in open session?
I'm sorry, David. I didn't understand your question.
It sounds like you just reported that you took a vote in closed session.
I'm sorry. I was not clear. We took the vote in open session before we convened the closed session, and then we went into closed session.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for clarifying. Please, Director Block.
Supervisor Peters, I think what I'd like to do is make a motion, a nomination and a motion that you're elected as permanent vice chair. Because you're pro tem for the purpose of this meeting, and hopefully you'll take the job permanently. So hopefully we'll get a second to that.
Second.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second nominating you as permanent vice chair. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes. Board Member Fredericks?
Yes.
Board Member Block?
Aye.
Board Member Moulton-Peters?
Yes.
Cooking the bacon?
3-0.
I needed to cook the garlic with it.
Okay.
Okay, Curtis, we'll turn it over to you for item number 4.
Okay, thank you very much. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen here, hopefully. And we are going to... Thanks for your patience while I get this set up. Okay, I think we might be in business. This is what I hope will be a brief presentation, sort of a primer on the Richardson's Bay Regional Agency. This is a presentation that I made to the City of Belvedere, their City Council, earlier this week. And I'll just run through it here for you. And it's something that I hope to also present to all the other member agencies of the Richardson's Bay Regional Agency, including Tiburon, Mill Valley, Marin County, and ultimately I would like to present to you the City of Sausalito as well. That way everybody's apprised of what's going on with RBRA, who we are, what we do, and what we're looking forward to here in 2021, which is actually quite a few good things. So I'll start out at the beginning. My name is Curtis Howell, and I serve as the harbor master for the Richardson's Bay Regional Agency. The Richardson's Bay Regional Agency is a joint powers authority that is composed of the cities of Belvedere, Tiburon, Marin County, Mill Valley, and prior to 2017, Sausalito. Richardson's Bay. This is a photo of the bay looking south from the northern reaches of the bay. It's an astoundingly beautiful natural anchorage tucked between Belvedere to the east and Sausalito to the west. It's a shared resource. It's enjoyed by local residents, larger Bay Area community, and during pre-Corona times, throngs of international visitors. It also has the distinction of being an amazing resource for local ecology, supporting eelgrass, migratory birds, a home for multiple types of sea life, and also and in doing all that, it also provides necessary support for humans. And we'll talk about our eelgrass management plan coming up here in a few minutes. The Richardson's Bay Regional Agency was created in 1985. It adopted its first codified set of rules in 1987. And the issues that were pertinent then are pertinent now. At that time, there was discussion of how do we preserve and protect water quality, natural resources, minimize adverse environmental impacts, and ultimately enhance public safety so that this is a resource that everybody can use in a safe manner. The special area plan that was adopted by the RBRA Board of Directors in 1985 included a provision that said vessels and floating structures used for residential purposes, such as floating homes and liveaboards, should be allowed only in recreational or houseboat marina berths when consistent with and in compliance with local codes. All anchor outs should be removed from Richardson's Bay. So these aren't necessarily new issues. And I'd also like to say that I think in the last couple of years, the Richardson's Bay Regional Agency has made a lot of progress in terms of enhancing the safety of the bay and moving to protect the resources that the bay represents. Namely, in July of 2019, the RBRA Board of Directors adopted Resolution 03-19. This was a resolution clarifying enforcement priorities for the use of Richardson's Bay. Specifically, this resolution identified enforcement of the 72-hour limit, primarily to stem the influx of vessels coming into Richardson's Bay, and also removal of unoccupied marine debris vessels that were located in the anchorage. There was also a provision about removing unpermitted moorings. So back in July of 2019, there were 190 vessels in Richardson's Bay. Of those 190 vessels, approximately 100 of those vessels were unoccupied, and in unoperational. So we basically had 100 boats floating out there that were better situated in a boat or a marina. Those unoccupied vessels were inoperable, unseaworthy, and they presented a threat not only to the environment but also other folks anchored out in Richardson's Bay, as well as members of the public using the bay as well as the shoreline. As of earlier this week, there are currently 97 vessels anchored out in Richardson's Bay. And of those 97 vessels, approximately 90 are occupied. So I want to take a quick detour and talk about Richardson's Bay from a regulatory standpoint real quickly. So when you look at a nautical chart, you know, when you're on land and you're driving around, you use a map to get from one place to another. When you're in the ocean or when you're on a body of water, you use a chart. The chart that's prepared by the federal government, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, identifies Richardson's Bay as a special anchorage. So typically when, as a mariner, as a sailor, a boater, when you go and drop anchor somewhere, there is a rule contained in the 1972 Convention on the International Regulations for Preventing Collisions at Sea, also known as the COLREGS. This document is essentially the rules of the road for mariners. What that says is that when you drop anchor, you should have an anchor light lit up at night so that other mariners know that you're stationary and to be able to avoid you. In a special anchorage, what's unique about Richardson's Bay is it has been an anchorage since Europeans started, and even before that, started, you know, coming to Richardson's Bay. So it's been an anchorage for a long time. NOAA's chart acknowledges that and identifies it as a special anchorage. And what this means per Rule 30G of the COLREGS is that if you're on a vessel less than 20 meters in length, if you drop anchor in Richardson's Bay, you don't have to light up an anchor light at night. I still recommend that people do. I think it's a prudent measure to take, and I think it's ultimately a safe move so that somebody doesn't accidentally run into you. Underneath the notation, there's a notation on the chart that says special anchorage, and underneath that it says 110.126A. What that refers to is the Code of Federal Regulations, Section 110.126A, which states, mariners anchoring in the special anchorage area should consult the applicable ordinances of Richardson's Bay Regional Agency and the County of Marin. These ordinances establish requirements on matters including the anchoring of vessels, placement of moorings, and use of anchored and mooring vessels within the special anchorage area. Information on these local agency requirements may be obtained from the Richardson's Bay Harbor Master. So it's acknowledged as a special anchorage, and it's acknowledged that Richardson's Bay Regional Agency has jurisdiction to regulate the anchorage. I also wanted, as we talk about anchorages, I wanted to highlight the difference between an anchorage and a marina. Something that is realized that some folks maybe don't understand the difference. A marina is where you can take your boat and park it in a slip or a berth, and you can tie it out, tie it off, and it's secure. And when you're in that slip or that berth, you have access to water, trash. You have access to restrooms. You have land access. Your vessel is secure. That's what you pay for when you obtain a slip in a marina. Now, when you're in an anchorage, the responsibility falls on the shoulders of the mariner to properly dispose of trash, properly dispose of sewage, make sure that their vessel is operable and seaworthy so that if they need to weigh anchor and leave due to inclement weather, they can do that. But ultimately, things like access, water, sewage disposal, fuel, those are all services that you would expect to pay for and that you would look to some sort of either municipal or public entity to ask them for access for those services. So that's the, you know, it's an important distinction to understand between an anchorage and a marina. Anchorages aren't expected to provide those services that you would find in a marina. So going back to the progress that the Richardson's Bay Regional Agency Board of Directors has made is that a transition plan was adopted in June of 2020. So In July of 2019, there was a, the clarification of and prioritization of enforcement were presented in a public forum. Prior to that, years prior to that, from probably starting in 2015 and evolving to present day, Richardson's Bay Regional Agency had a series of public meetings, community meetings, public hearings, public meetings, creating the transition plan. And the transition plan, the goal of it was to protect the essential values of the Anchorage, the environmental resources, preserving and protecting and figuring out how to use the Anchorage in a way that protects and promotes those resources, those environmental, that ecological uniqueness about Richardson's Bay. And then, of course, also acknowledging that in response to enforcement action from the Bay Conservation Development Commission, also known as BCDC, that continued management of the bay needed to take place to reduce the number of liveaboard anchor outs over time to zero. One of the cornerstones of the transition plan was the outreach efforts. Back in July of 2019, the RBRA contracted with a gentleman by the name of Andrew Heening, who will be speaking on this matter of the next item. But Mr. Heening, along with his colleagues in the outreach community, began efforts to identify and make contact with individuals in the Anchorage that were especially vulnerable and begin the efforts of trying to find them safe and secure housing. The transition plan highlights this and dedicates RBRA to finding a way to transition people onto land off of the Anchorage, starting with the most vulnerable folks and ideally on the most vulnerable vessels so that we can get them somewhere safe and secure. Recently, there's been some really, really positive progress. And again, Andrew Henning and his colleague Karen Strolio will talk about it a little bit more on the next item. But the Marin County Health and Human Services Division has obtained funding for the addition for two new outreach caseworkers in southern Marin, with the specific target being Richardson's Bay. Not solely Richardson's Bay, but attention is given to Richardson's Bay. What's significant about this is for a long time, Richardson's Bay, I think, was, Mr. Henning did a fabulous job at raising awareness about the plight of individuals living out on the water and the, frankly, dangerous conditions that these folks can be in sometimes, particularly during the winter months when the storms come. And we saw evidence of it this year when we had a number of boats go adrift, a number of boats sink. We've actually had, unfortunately, a couple of deaths on the Anchorage this year. These are things that we are trying to avoid and minimize, and the efforts for housing outreach is a cornerstone of how we're going to get that done. The transition plan runs through, a series of principles. It's, affirming that Richardson's Bay is a temporary anchorage. It's affirming that Richardson's Bay Regional Agency created a safe and seaworthy program to allow folks who met the requirements for the safe and seaworthy program to stay for an additional limited period of time, similar to like a legacy vessel program. The transition plan really focuses on trying to relocate folks into alternative housing and ultimately realizing a reduction in the number of vessels and liveaboards out on the Anchorage. And finally, of course, protecting eelgrass and the ecosystems that Richardson's Bay hosts. So on the topic of ecology and ecosystems, Richardson's Bay is incredibly unique in that it is home to one of the larger remaining stands of eelgrass in the Bay Area. This is significant because eelgrass, well, it does a lot of things. It sequesters carbon, it reduces erosion, it provides habitat for birds and animals passing through to feed as well as breed. It provides habitat for commercial and recreational fishing resources. You know, Richardson's Bay is still home to one of the last remaining commercial herring runs in the state. So it's an amazing resource. The other thing that's unique about it is that for folks who come to Marin County, that come to Sausalito, that come to Richardson's Bay, it's an up-close and personal interaction with nature. It's an opportunity for us to say, how do we coexist? How can we move forward in a way that we get to realize our connectivity with the environment, with one another? I think that's one of the really unique opportunities of Richardson's Bay, and that's what's so exciting about the Eelgrass Protection Management Program that's being put together by Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg of Coastal Policy Solutions. She is the individual that the RBRA has contracted with, and she's done some really good work. We're actually hoping to present to your board in April about the progress we've made with the draft Eelgrass Protection and Management Program. And I'll also mention another really positive recent development is that the Ocean Protection Council awarded us grant funding to not only move forward with the implementation of the Eelgrass Protection Management Program, but also monitoring and fulfilling our mandate to roll that out. So that's a big deal, and we're pretty excited about it. So finally, when you look at the transition plan, safety is really the underpinning of why we did what we did. Safety for the environment, making sure that ecology has a chance to flourish, which ultimately helps us as humans. We are trying to make the Anchorage a place that everyone can use and feel safe on. And that starts with making sure that folks who bring vessels into the Anchorage, they have operational vessels, they have seaworthy vessels, they understand what it means to be a mariner, what good seamanship practices are. We're trying to get the word out. We're changing our conversation in that Richardson's Bay is a 72-hour anchorage. It's been that way since the adoption of the original code back in 1987. And we're trying to get the word out that for folks that if they stay beyond 72 hours, they will be in violation of the rules and regulations for anchoring in Richardson's Bay. The other thing is by promoting the Safe and Seaworthy program, that ultimately the thought there was that by setting a standard and creating a program where mariners could stay for an additional limited period of time, provided that they raise their vessel to a more seaworthy standard, ideally that positions them to be eligible for slips and marinas when they come up. It positions them to be eligible to obtain insurance for their vessel because now it's in working seaworthy order. So the idea was that in the long run, these boats would be safer for their occupants and for the people around them. Another item that I wanted to touch on quickly is as a regular, twice a year is a regular course of action. The RBRA performs water testing with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. This is a staff person from the Regional Water Quality Control Board here taking water samples. The last round of testing that we completed and got results back for was in October of 2020. When I spoke with the individual that crunches all the data for us, they came back and said that the water quality is looking the best it has in quite a while. So the water testing results have been coming back quite positive. We just finished our wet season water testing about a week ago. So we'll be getting results from that, and I'll be able to report back to your board in April on how we're doing there. Finally, I think it's worth discussing real quickly how we got to where we're at right now. When you look back through time and you look at the evolution of – why the RBRA adopted a resolution in 2019 clarifying their enforcement priorities and why we ultimately adopted a transition plan. Yes, it's safety driven, but it was also in response to enforcement action from the Bay Conservation and Development Commission. They are the regulatory agency that regulates development throughout the Bay Area. And ultimately, when the RBRA's special area plan was adopted, that's something that did go through BCDC for review and approval. So they have a vested interest, in ensuring that the Bay is managed in a way that enables public access, enables environmental protection, and make sure that it's a safe use for everyone. Finally, this is a picture of a vessel that washed in this past winter. And this is, unfortunately, a close-up shot of what a number of vessels still look like out in the bay and what, keeps me up at night. This vessel went adrift back during, I think it was two or three storms back now. And the vessel occupant was so shaken to wake up at a marina clear across the bay. You know, this particular person didn't start out here, that they at that point were so alarmed and scared that they said they were done and they walked away from it. There was also the issue that they washed into a marina and they had to be able to get their boat back out of the marina. Unfortunately, this vessel was not capable of navigation. So fortunately, we were able to provide the service of disposing that vessel for them without any charge to them. So that's part of the voluntary turn-in program that the RBRA participates in. That's actually a program that the California Department of Boating and Waterways provides funding for. But this is why we're doing what we're doing. We want to make sure that we have a bay that's safe for everybody. And that concludes my presentation. And if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer for you.
Curtis? Oh, good. Thank you for unmuting me. So you're asking for questions from the board now, is that right?
Any questions or comments? And if there are none, this is more of an informational item, but we can certainly open it up to the public.
Well, we'll have public comment at the end of this, so it follows the presentation that Andrew Henning will make. So if there are no questions from the board, I will thank you, and I'd like to move on to the next agenda item. And then we will have public comment after that. Thank you.
So next, I'd like to, item number five is another informational item, and I'd like to introduce Andrew Henning, who is with the City of San Rafael as well as Downtown Streets team, as well as RBRA's consultant in the matter of performing outreach into trying to find folks services out in the Anchorage. So I'm going to turn it over to Andrew for him to take it away.
Great. Thanks so much, Curtis, and good evening, board members. I'm going to go ahead and share. Actually, if I could be enabled to share my screen, I have a short presentation that I'll show you.
Okay, you should be able to do that now.
Okay, perfect. Okay, great. Well, again, my name is Andrew Henning, and as Curtis mentioned, I'm wearing a few different hats nowadays in the county. I am now working for myself, but I have my current clients include RBRA, the City of San Rafael, Opening Doors Marin, and then some work outside the county as well. I have spent the last 8 years working in Marin and 11 years working on homelessness in the Bay Area. So a lot of, I think, expertise and knowledge about around what's going on in Marin and what's working and what could be done better. But I wanted to start tonight by really just giving your board an overview briefly of what we have been doing around homelessness the past 5 years in Marin County, because there has been a pretty dramatic transformation in our approach to homelessness. Just to start with, I think the good news, since October 1st of 2017, we've housed over 300 of the most vulnerable people in our community in permanent housing. And from 2017 to 2019, that represented an almost 30% reduction in long-term homelessness in our community. For the people that have been housed, over 90% are still in housing, which is the outcome that we really want, people to actually stay housed. And at least using data from San Rafael, for people that were previously homeless and then placed into housing, we've seen an almost 90% reduction in criminal justice involvement, as well as an over 50% reduction in EMS calls for service. And so I really want to set the context of how we got here. And so to understand that, we have to go back to 2015. And it's a much longer story, and I'm happy to share that with you. But in short, there was an insight at that time that really began in San Rafael and downtown San Rafael about how we were addressing homelessness and how it was not really working very well. And that core insight was that if you were to look at everyone experiencing homelessness, there was a small minority of the overall homeless community that was generating most of our challenges around homelessness. And when I say challenges, I mean a couple different things. If you look at people experiencing homelessness over a spectrum of people that are first time, they just became homeless, just lost their housing, to people who have been homeless for years, even in some cases in our community, decades, the public costs are exponentially increasing for the longer that someone's homeless. And this is emergency room costs, criminal justice costs, and other emergency interventions. We also find that in terms of community concern, those rise also exponentially as the longer that someone's been on the street. And a big part of that is that because the people that are experiencing chronic homelessness are some of the most vulnerable in the community. So Curtis had mentioned earlier that some people have passed away on the Anchorage this past year. And a lot of that was from long-term chronic health issues. It's not from an acute night of cold. It really is from long-term health issues that are going untreated. And so what we realized is that a lot of our historic focus had been on this other part of the curve, not on people that were long-term chronically homeless. And so because of that, we didn't honestly really know what to do. And so we hit the road and we did a number of field trips around the region. We took our city leaders, our county leaders to help educate them and educate ourselves about how to approach chronic homelessness differently. We started mapping our system of care for the first time and understanding people's actual lived experience with the system. And what we found was that when it came to chronic homelessness, you had a group of people that were inherently challenging to serve at times because of behavioral health issues, substance abuse issues, traumatic brain injury, and oftentimes many of these issues at the same time. We had unintentionally created programs with a lot of barriers, and so people with these challenges were failing out of the programs. They lost trust in the system. They didn't seek help, and they got worse. And as I said, there were some people in our community that have been homeless for 40 years, stuck in this cycle of not getting the help that they needed. And so what we realized is that we don't need just another program. We need another approach that recognizes the unique needs of individual people. And so in San Mateo, we had learned about an approach called the HOT team, or the Homeless Outreach Team, which is really just another way of saying a really focused case conferencing methodology that really focused on the most high needs individuals, bringing together all the different partners that might interact with those individuals and coming up with custom housing plans to get them back inside. And part of that meant jumping straight from people being on the street, bypassing all of that kind of homelessness management, if you will, of people trying to navigate that maze of programs and getting them straight into housing and then assisting with any underlying needs or resources that people might have needed. And the result was that for the first 18 months that we did this, we housed 23 of the most vulnerable people in downtown San Rafael. And so this really was a huge success because, honestly, a lot of people had given up the hope that there was a chance to house some of these folks. And we proved that there was a different way. And so in 2017, based on this pilot, we said we want to scale this and have more impact. And so we learned about a group called Community Solutions, which is a national nonprofit. They're running a campaign called Built for Zero, which now has over 80 communities across the country working to end chronic and veteran homelessness in this exact same way of working one person at a time down a by-name list and connecting those people with housing and services. And so in Marin County, what that looks like is that it really is as simple as a three-legged stool. We have our by name list strategy of prioritizing the most vulnerable people. We have really worked to reallocate existing resources, such as a program called Whole Person Care, to reallocate money to case management for people that are really vulnerable, that are living on the street. And then we've had an incredible partnership with the Marin Housing Authority to get those people connected with vouchers. And then most of those people have been housed in scattered site units all across the county. What's important is that these three steps also represent at times what can be the bottleneck in our system, because each of these steps represents a point where we need to engage and move people through the process to get them housed. So we need to get them assessed. We need to get them document ready for housing. We need to get them connected with case management. And all of this is beholden to the housing that's available, which unfortunately remains scarce and not at the level that we need. But again, that being said, since October 1st of 2017, when this became a countywide system, we've now housed over 320 people, which is truly quite remarkable. So my involvement, so how I got involved. So as Curtis said, for the past 5 years, I served as the director of homeless planning for the city of San Rafael. So in that capacity, I was intimately involved with the launch of the HOT team and then the evolving countywide system. And I should note that there are probably four or five different committees that oversee this system, and I was involved with a lot of those. And around probably 2018 into early 2019, Beth Pollard, who was the executive director of RBRA at the time, started coming to a lot of those meetings and advocating that more resources be allocated to Southern Marin and to the Anchorage. And so in early 2019, or more like spring of 2019, I volunteered to help RBRA try to implement a similar homeless outreach team model for the water. And so for a few months, I was just doing that as part of, even though I was working for the city of San Rafael, I just offered to do that. And then we started getting some momentum. And the key to the success of this is having really good project management. That was what made the difference for the initial HOT team, was having strong biweekly meetings, someone that's tracking actions and following up on action items. And so I told Beth, I was like, you know, hey, I can't really do that through my role at the city. But then we basically came up with an idea of, well, what if I could do that on the side if that worked for the city of San Rafael? So in August of 2019, I took on this additional role to help RBRA build out a by name list. And so a little over a year ago, I had presented to this board with something of a strategic assessment of our progress for those first couple months. And I thought I'd share that again briefly tonight, because it actually, I think, is still pretty accurate to where we are. And this, I just use the basic kind of SWOT methodology for this. So in terms of strengths, we have a lot of things going for this collaborative. We've had incredible participation from our local providers, including Downtown Streets Team, St. Vincent's, the Ritter Center, Marin City Health and Wellness, the Housing Authority, the county. And because of that partnership, we've been able to develop a very accurate accounting, with Curtis's help, of you know, what are the vessels on the water, and then who are people that we should be trying to engage. And so that itself has been great tactically. And with that list and that information, we've been able to turn around and begin advocating, like, honestly, never before, at a countywide level, to bring more exposure and services to Southern Marin. In terms of weaknesses, though, like I mentioned earlier, like the rest of that, the system, we are at the mercy a bit of larger resource scarcities. So there have been a lot more resources that are coming available, and we're going to talk about that with the Streets team. But that's just something to keep in mind, that we don't control federal housing vouchers. We don't control state case management dollars. So those can be bottlenecks for our success. Another thing that's come up in the past is, you know, people living on the water, certainly there are a number of boats, like Curtis said, that are extremely, extremely vulnerable to sinking or going adrift, and that itself can cause an extreme danger to people that are living in those vessels. And so even though that's the case, people experiencing homelessness countywide, we see a lot of, unfortunately, death in the homeless community from, again, chronic illnesses, from overdoses, unfortunately from suicide. And so the correlation around death is actually, sadly, fairly distributed countywide. So even though the vessels are a unique aspect of being homeless, it doesn't necessarily make someone more homeless than being homeless on land. And of course, just like when we started the initial program in San Rafael, there's skepticism among people in the community of whether or not this is actually something that's worthwhile to engage with. In terms of threats, potentially, and I mentioned this when we spoke before, and I think we've seen this play out, is that as there's been more enforcement efforts on the water, it has had a major impact on our ability to build relationships with people on the water. And so a big push at that time was to try to figure out a way to get on the water that did not involve needing to necessarily go out with the harbor master or police or the sheriff's office. And I'll circle back to that in a moment. But the other threat, and it's something that we're still working on today, and I want to thank the city of Sausalito for their partnership on this, especially later this month, is in our system, people have a choice of where they want to live. So once they make it to that point of being ready to be housed, our system is based on choice. So if someone, let's say there's a housing opportunity in Novato, people aren't forced to take that. And so what we find is that a lot of people want to live in the community where they have been living. And so for us, I think finding more landlords and housing opportunities in Southern Marin is going to be key to ensuring that as people gain housing resources, they can stay in their local community. But on the good side of things, again, I think we've developed a really strong list. We have a good meeting cadence. We're actually now meeting weekly. We have a great, consistent group of partners. And ultimately, I think, you know, it was never my intention to do this permanently. I think we're in a place where, you know, if RBRA was ready and if resources were right, I think this could be the torch could be passed to a local service provider who's also out there engaging and actually working directly with people to connect with services. And then also just to note, at that time there was new funding through a program called HAP, but there continues to be a lot of new money coming to our county, to the state, that we could leverage to, again, help people transition into other housing. And so on that final note, and what I mentioned earlier, when I gave this presentation last year, we were really focused on trying to develop a way to get on the water that was more neutral and would allow for more productive conversations between outreach workers and people living on the water. And so we had forged a kind of an innovative partnership with the Audubon Society to actually shuttle outreach workers out onto the water to meet with people. And we spent a few months like getting the insurance and the MOU and all this kind of stuff in place. And then we started it, and I think we got two sessions in, and then COVID hit. And so because of shelter in place, that was no longer an option. So honestly, like, that's why it feels a little bit Groundhog's Day right now giving this presentation, because a lot of the past year has been trying to adapt to COVID and the constraints that that's put in place. But I think what has happened, even as COVID's been in place, is that it's allowed us an opportunity, and Curtis has been great with this as well, to really advocate to the broader system of care about the urgency and the need of people living on the water. And as a result of that, there was some new funding that became available at the end of last year called ESGCV, which is the Emergency Solutions Grant for COVID. And through that process, the county conducted a process where they did a priority setting. And through that, and it was amazing that I remember Curtis and I were in the meeting, and we actually weren't the one, like, we had done so much, groundwork and seed planning that we weren't even the ones advocating that Southern Marin was an underserved area. It was amazing. We had executive directors from other organizations and other partners saying, this is really the time to invest and to really help and serve this community. And because of that, outreach in underserved communities was added to a priority bucket to that funding. And the streets team, who's going to speak next, was able to actually get a contract to meet that goal. So with that, I will stop sharing my screen, and I will turn it over to Karen, who can tell you more about the specifics of what that contract looks like and what their work is going to be on the water.
Awesome. Thanks, Andrew. I also would like to share my screen that's not going to work, is it? All right.
Karen, I gave you the permission to do that, so you should be able to. Yeah, there you go.
Look at that. Are you ready for this? Okay. Awesome. So, yeah, as Andrew mentioned, my name's Karen Strelia. I'm the director of Downtown Streets team in the North Bay. And what I want to do is I'm actually going to take you guys back into a time warp because I want to walk you through how DST even became really involved with the water. I've been really passionate about having services out there with those for those living on the water because I've seen for years now that there's a vulnerability there that is fairly unique. So I'm going to rewind back to 2018, where this is when I was really doing the circuit around mobile showers. We had already had showers going for about a year. And before we launched showers, we did surveys throughout the county to really understand the need for people and the experience, the access, alternate shower, alternate bathing opportunities that they had. And Sausalito was a standout community in terms of access. It was hard for people to get from Sausalito to the Ritter Center, which is where their brick and mortar shower in the county was. It's the only shower that was available at the time. So a lot of them were bathing in the bay. A lot of them were bathing from their boats. A lot of them were using garden hoses. And I really felt passionate about bringing an alternate opportunity for folks. So we started working on that. But really to understand the community that I had an interest in serving, we had an opportunity to go out with the old harbor master, Bill. That's that picture on the right where I'm with all of our county partners. And that's where I got to do outreach with everyone for the first time. So that's where I really got to see what was going on in the water and the vulnerability that was there. It was pretty incredible. And also to show all of our county partners what was going on out there. Felt really important. Like that was important work too. So we really took it from there. So fast forward, we started building out partnerships with Andrew's support. Of course, this is when we were out with the Audubon Society. We started to really engage with folks. We were going out once a week. It felt really, really awesome. We were so excited to be out there in a consistent way. That's our case manager, Sean, who was going out there. He was really our guy who was out there doing the work and getting to know folks who were out there, seeing what their needs were, what could he bring to them, getting them connected to housing, getting them connected to shelters. But it was really more just about being very present on a consistent basis. It was just being there. And when somebody was ready to make a move, Sean was there to help them make the move when they were ready to do it. So it felt really important to be out there in a consistent way. We were super excited about it. And then COVID hit. And so even though we weren't able to go out on the water like we had been doing in the past, Sean had already built those relationships with the folks that he had been working with. So he was still connecting with them over the phone. He was still engaging with them. So when, for example, somebody recently lost their boat, Sean was able to work really closely with him to get him into the shelter, get him connected to his boat to retrieve some of his personal items. So the relationship has still carried on despite the challenges of this time that we're in. So I'm going to fast forward again, and Andrew touched a little bit on that ESG funding, and we're incredibly excited to have been awarded those dollars because we have already had kind of a foothold in the water, so to speak. Not that you can, it's water, but we definitely had a foothold in the water. We already had that relationship. Part of our challenge as COVID hit, our work shifted, so our bandwidth became very strained. It felt really important for us to still be out there. So to be able to get the ESG dollars was incredibly excited. These are our two new outreach staff workers. We've got Joel and we've got Kylie. They've already been trained. They've hit the ground. Their focus points are San Rafael and South, so they will be in the Richardson Bay 2 days a week. And to do that, we built some new partnerships with local businesses. And so within that ESG grant funding, we were able to also support small businesses in Sausalito specifically. So one day a week, we'll be going out with one of these partners. A second day of week, we'll be going out with another one of these partners. We're elated to be in cahoots with them. They are incredibly passionate too. So we're excited to share this work. Yeah, so we'll be going out twice a week, every week, to see what we can do in terms of building out those relationships farther. And so, you know, we talk about, like, this is the work that we're doing on the water, but, like Andrew mentioned, we started this work because this is where our passion pulled us. DST is a work experience program, and we're on the land, and we operate work experience teams where people volunteer their time with us Monday through Friday, 20 hours a week, in exchange for stipends, case management, and employment specialist support. So we really took a left turn to be on the water the way we did. There was no funding involved in that. It was really just about us being passionate about the work, passionate about serving the people who needed support. We would hear about people passing away on the water, and that is awful. It's hard enough to hear people passing away on land as well. So it's just really, there was this pull to be where the humans' need was. And so as we think about what DST can do on the water in terms of, you know, getting folks connected to resources, getting any documentation ready with them, working on goals that they have, it really falls in line with what DST is. I do have this big picture idea as we start to build these relationships and understanding what skill sets people have on the water. I know they're not sitting out there twiddling their thumbs. They're very active community members. And so finding a way to channel their brilliance and the skills that they have feels really exciting to me. Something I would like to do is actually build out DST's very first work experience program on the water so we can engage folks in a different way. I'd like to work with different businesses, see if we can get folks connected who are ready for employment into an opportunity that fits the scope of their skill set, and if somebody's curious about learning a different skill set, working with them on that too. So DST comes to the table with a breadth of experience in a whole other realm off of the water. We're excited to try this new thing. None of our other communities have done this. DST is in 16 communities. So this is really new for us too. I'm honored to be here. I'm honored to have won these dollars so that we can help serve the community. And I'm excited to just continue to partner with Andrew and with, you know, with our partners that we've got going on. So that's the quick and dirty. I'm totally ready to answer any questions, but if you think of something after the meeting, I've left my email address here, so you can email me at any time, Karen@streetsteam.org. And that's it in a very, very quick nutshell.
Great. Thank you very much, Karen and Andrew. Great. Wonderful, the services and that you're bringing to us. I'm going to ask our board if there are any questions or comments that you would like to make on these presentations, and then we'll move to public open time.
I would just like to thank Karen and Andrew for all the work they're doing. I think it's really important and a big part of what needs to be accomplished by the agency.
Agree. Okay. Yes, heartily agree with that, and look forward to you're coming back and giving us updates about how things are going and things we need to be thinking about and doing next. So thank you very much. I'm going to ask you both if you're able to stick around. There may be some questions that come up from the public that you can answer. I think we'll do our public comment, and then if there are answers to questions, we'll give you a chance to provide those. So I'd like to open for public open time. Curtis, how do we...
Yeah, you know, actually, before we do that, I wanted to take a moment. We came into this meeting so fast, I don't think we ever actually introduced your board to the public. We have, if I may I do a quick introduction and then you can each say something? So we have our new acting, well, now vice chair, Stephanie Moulton Peters from the County of Marin, representing South Marin. We have Steve Block from the City of Belvidere, who's the new appointee from Belvidere City Council. And then we have Alice Fredericks, who came to the rescue tonight for the City of Tiburon and is standing in for the city there. Unfortunately, Jim Wickham was unable to join us this evening due to family issues, and we wish him the best. But I did want to just take a moment to thank you all for being here. And if anybody wants to say hi and introduce yourselves real quick, I'd really appreciate it. And then at the end of the meeting, what I wanted to do was introduce our new Assistant Harbor Master, Jim Malcolm. And I was going to save that for item number 7. So
okay. All right.
Vice Chair Peters, would you like to say hi?
No, we're a hardworking group. I think Steve or Alice, do you want to say anything? We're here to serve. So let's move to public open time.
Very well. Thank you. So what we'll do for public open time is our meeting coordinator or meeting host will call out the person who's up to speak, and they'll have 3 minutes to speak, and then we'll continue moving through the group of folks who wish to speak.
Robbie Powell, you have 3 minutes to speak.
Hi there, thank you. Well, it's been a couple months since we had one of these meetings, and I think a lot has changed. And I think one thing people, you know, it's amazing to see the change in tone coming from the RBRA right now, and just public in general, because even just a few months ago, the false pretense that occupied boats weren't being taken and crushed was still being presented. Now I think we're seeing a change where finally we're getting to the marrow of the community, and yet the RBRA is still cutting. I was trying to get onto the eelgrass conversation just yesterday. Rebecca reached out, and I was very encouraged by her proactive trying to reach out to me about, and right as I was going to get on, when I get a call, Curtis Havel's pulling a boat up on the hard at the Army Corps. And what I think what has happened too, you know, nobody can deny now that, you know, just that occupied boats are being taken. People are being thrown into tents at the Sausalito Tent City. Nobody can deny that. And now that you all know, I also want you to know that Curtis Havel crushes boats without due process. And I'm calling on the board of directors to cease and desist in this practice of pulling boats up on the hard just like that. There's this erroneous assumption that, oh, because it's a 72-hour anchorage, everybody's got notice that their boat could be taken at any time. And they should, they get their time on anchorage. By the time it's taken to the Corps, it's time to be dealt with. That's the current policy. And what I'm saying to you right now, there has to be a minimum of 10 days that a boat be put up and allowed for the owner to have due process to deal with their property. I mean, it's that's simple property rights. Any car that gets impounded, they don't crush the car right away. You have process. And I think that if there is not an immediate change of policy, I think moving forward we're going to have to vigorously assert people's rights more vigorously, because if people's boats are getting crushed without any recourse, well, of course, I mean, good grief. I mean, what kind of operation is that? What kind of operation just like will take a boat and crush it without even letting the person get their paperwork together, get their fix? Brian yesterday,
10 seconds remaining, sir.
What kind of operation? So cease and desist from not giving people due process for their property.
Thank you. All right. Are we opening up for our next speaker?
Robert Tillman, you have 3 minutes.
He's still on mute.
I've written to the RBA or RA board. I hope that you've received my email. I'm a resident of Sausalito since 1988, and I want you to know that I and many of my neighbors very strongly support what the RBRA is doing in managing Richardson Bay. And what our biggest concern is that your board of directors not hold course and implement your plan. we know that you are getting a great deal of public pressure from various sources not to implement your plan, but we want you to follow through for the sake of not just Richardson Bay, but for our community. I have spent hours on the phone with Curtis Havel. He's taken me through the plan, and I just want you to know that we support it and that I have urged also the Sausalito City Council to provide whatever support they can to RBRA in implementing your plan. So please continue. Thank you, and I really appreciate your hard work, and I really appreciate your strength in following through. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker, please.
Jack, too, please unmute. You have 3 minutes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. No, good. Jack, will you try unmuting yourself again?
Does this work?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'd like to comment. Earlier this week, both my anchors were pulled from when I was on the dock doing temporary routine maintenance from my sailboat. I had my skiff clearly tied to the anchors outside the channel, despite what was claimed. Curtis could have called me if there was any problem, but rather wasted both their time pulling the anchors, cutting the splice off the painter line rather than untying the bowline knot, and left the anchors and chain in the disorganized pile at the Army Corps of Engineers. In my line of work as a diver, if I were to do the job this sloppy and leave a mess on the dock as Curtis did, I'd be fired immediately. Recovering my anchors and resetting them took 2 tide cycles and cost me hundreds of dollars in labor. I was on a job while this happened, which I have included an invoice in the email I sent to the RBRA in hopes that you'll understand that resetting an anchor system takes much more time and effort than just dropping a heavy piece of metal in the water, as Curtis said to me on the phone. The process took premeditation and skill to execute properly, and I also prefer to dive down, follow the chain to make sure the anchor's dug well and not fouled on any debris resting on the bay floor. I leave my anchors tied to my smaller skiff when I take my sailboat to pump out, fill up on water, and go sailing. Leaving the 2 anchors set is better for the eelgrass, also safer for my vessel and the vessels around me. If I were to use 1 large anchor with 1 large single chain off my windlass, as was suggested, my vessel would swing around in a much larger radius, creating a crop circle as explained in the RBRA eelgrass study. I would also be digging and resetting my anchor every time I go into marinas to pump out and fill it with water. Alternative to Curtis's suggestion, I set my 2 anchors in accordance with Chapman's book of piloting and seamanship and Lynn and Larry's The Practical Sailor. It's a superior setup for multiple reasons, such as it holds up better in gale force winds and is much safer. The RBRA eelgrass study shows 2 anchors do significantly less damage to the eelgrass on the bay floor because the vessel pivots around the swivel of the 2 anchor chains rather than dragging on the chain around in a circle. And also with this system, I can keep an extra anchor attached to my windlass off my bow in the event that another vessel breaks loose and gets fouled up in the anchor lines. In this event, I can detach my vessel from the 2 anchor system and navigate to a safer area and use the bow anchor to reset. I was hoping in this meeting we can have a productive conversation and compromise on a policy that allows mariners to temporarily leave their skiffs tied to their anchor systems while doing vessel maintenance and repair to keep up with the standards set by the Safe Harbor Program. And that's it. I yield my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Eva, please unmute. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. This is Eva Crisanti. I just want to point out a couple things, a couple housekeeping items. I called into the meeting a couple minutes before 5:30. I wasn't let in until 6:18. And I want to point out that it's not impossible to send an email message to your regular list explaining to people that you're going to be over 45 minutes starting the open session. That way people know. I also want to point out that RBRA isn't an underfunded
organization. Curtis Havel has a generous salary. I work with a lot of organizations that run on a lot less money, and they manage to run their Zoom meetings competently, efficiently, and they're able to let people know when they're running late. It's not rocket science. But unfortunately, I see a trend of sort of highly remunerated people who are not able to do the basics. And I've noticed that a lot in the BCDC meetings when Havel is being questioned. He just doesn't seem prepared to do this job. And I understand Robert Tillman is very happy with his agenda, and that's great and everything. But clearly, there's an issue of confidence. There's also been an issue of transparency. And I want to point out that, you know, it's a very upbeat story on the homelessness outreach. But I also want to point out that I've interviewed quite a few unhoused people in Marin County, and Andrew Henning is not regarded that well. And I think part of the frustration is that he doesn't seem to support basic things that unhoused people need and require and want. And one of the difficulties here is that, and I see this consistently in Marin County, is that you've set up a situation that's supposed to address, you know, the problem, these poor anchor outs, but you don't have anyone on your team who's actually from that community. And it really impacts your ability to be effective. It also impacts your ability to even comprehend the situation. So I have to say I'm to say that I'm underwhelmed by what I see going on here is a pretty big understatement.
10 seconds.
I guess that's it.
Are there any others who wish to speak? Okay, I'm not seeing any other hands. Thank you for your comments. I don't think would anyone like to respond to any of the questions, not the personal criticisms, but just any of the questions? Okay. Then that will lead us then to our next agenda item, which is item number 7.
All right. Just to wrap up the meeting, I wanted to give you a quick general staff report. I want to introduce our new assistant harbor master, Jim Malcolm. He comes to the RVRA after a 27-year career with the United States Coast Guard. He is a wealth of information and a wealth of knowledge. What's kind of neat about the working relationship right now is, whereas I am more of a sailor, he has got the motor vessel thing down. So between the two of us, we make a pretty good team in terms of covering all our water moving parts. Something else that he's hit the ground running. He's been on the job now for 7 weeks. And he's really an asset to this agency. He's helping relieve some of the back pressure that had been building up over time when the RBRA was out without an assistant harbor master for a period of time. So anyways, Jim, I would like to hand the floor over to you to say hello, if you'd like to just say a quick couple of words. And I'll unmute you. There you go.
Good evening, board members, and thank you very much. It's definitely a pleasure to be a part of the RBRA, and just to echo on what Supervisor Moulton-Peters said earlier, definitely a person of action, and I'm pleased to be here, and I'm going to continue to do my best for the betterment of Richardson's Bay and for the agency. Thank you.
Great. Welcome, Jim. Questions or comments from the board?
And beyond that, I also wanted to just let everybody know, as part of my staff report, the RBRA has re-initiated ride-alongs, regular ride-alongs with our teammates or our member agency staff from Belvedere, Tiburon, Mill Valley, and Marin County Sheriff's Office. So we've got all the different member agencies participating with us out on the water, helping to manage the anchorage. The Safe and Seaworthy program, I wanted to touch base on that real quick. The Safe and Seaworthy program, when it was implemented, folks had an opportunity to enroll in the program. We had a total of 18 boats enroll. Part of that program includes going around and doing vessel inspections. Since Mr. Malcolm joined the team, we've completed 6 of those inspections, and we've got more scheduled here in the next couple of weeks. And so far, so good. We're looking, the large majority of the vessels that we've looked at have been vessels that are operable and seaworthy and only require minor tweaks to bring them up to a level of seaworthiness. So we're really happy about that. And finally, it's budget season, and I've been working closely with the folks up at the County of Marin, our finance folks up there, as well as some behind-the-scenes support from our retired executive director to put a budget together. Just a quick preview, it's looking like it's going to be a more or less a flat budget, so we'll be bringing more details of that to you at the next meeting. That concludes my comments. Thank you.
Good. I'm looking at my colleagues on the board. Are there any questions for the Harbor Master? Okay, very good. Seeing none, I am going to welcome again the new board members. I want to thank our presenters tonight, and I want to thank the members of the public for joining us. We'll meet again next month, and for now, this meeting is adjourned. Good night, everyone.